Al Jazeera Podcasts.
Aiming to end divisions in Somalia, federal leaders are invited to discuss insecurity and constitutional changes. But with Somali politics so deeply fragmented, is national unity possible? And what role do Somalia's neighbors play in achieving a more peaceful future? I'm Mohammed Jamjoum, and you're listening to the Inside Story podcast, where we dissect, analyze, and help define major global stories. All right, let's go ahead and bring in our guests. In Minneapolis, in the United States, Abdi Ismail Samatar is a Somali senator for Somaliland. In the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Afyar Elmi is a research professor at the City University of Mogadishu. And in Maputo, capital of Mozambique, Omar Mahmoud is the senior analyst for Eastern Africa at the International Crisis Group. A warm welcome to you all, and thanks so much for joining us today on Inside Story. Afyari, let me start with you today. How much is riding on this upcoming national consultative meeting? And can this meeting actually lead to finding solutions to Somalia's multitude of problems?
Thank you, Mohammed, and thank you to the guests as well. I just wanted to start with the short background of what is happening now. This meeting is coming right after a sham process of constitution making, where the current government actually unilaterally created or made its own constitution that reflects its interests and priorities. So for that reason, actually, they wanted to have some buy-in for these leaders who, in the first place, have given some endorsements to the current process. So that's basically they're coming back and maybe re-examining or re-evaluating the processes that they have embarked on about a year and a half ago. And I guess what's at stake now is the promise given to the leaders for either extension or self-selection in regards to the indirect election is that they are expected to go through. So there are more or less, I think, process where just very few leaders are coming together to design their own system that benefits them.
Abdi, let me ask you. You heard there from Afyari, and he was talking about this being a difficult process, fraught with complications. This meeting is being heralded as a chance to overcome differences, as a chance to work towards a better future. From your perspective, can that be achieved, or are there just too many problems?
It's a pleasure to be with you, and greetings to my comrade, Dr. Afyari. I think he's absolutely correct. As a member of parliament, as a senator, I can speak with some degree of authority and legitimacy in stating that it's a sham process. That the president is trying to sort of pull wool over people's eyes about a project that's going to lead to a dictatorship. I wrote a book called Africa's First Democrats, and Somalis know what democracy is. This is the first country in the continent of Africa post-independence that had a series of democratic elections and change of government. So we know what that is. As a member of parliament and as a senator, I can tell you with quite clearly that when we first met as parliamentarians to examine this process, we were supposed to have a document that provided the protocol through which the process will go before we get to the constitution itself. The sort of a speaker of the lower house of parliament, who is in cahoots with the president, decided to have a vote without even distributing the protocol for discussion. And then from there on, it's have been absolutely downhill. So if the president wants to have a constitutional process which will garner confidence from ordinary Somalis, then this is nothing that will lead to that process, because it's so deeply corrupt. The president has usurped the power of parliament, has usurped the power of the cabinet and the prime minister, and is actually acting unconstitutionally on the basis of the current constitution. So what will give the Somali people confidence that this project he wants to lead is going to give them confidence that they will have a voice in the way in which their country is run? So the whole process, in my opinion, as I have observed very closely as a senator, is a sham.
Omar, you heard there from Abdi. Abdi is saying that this whole process is a sham. You know, a lot of critics are saying that the proposed constitutional changes, which include introducing direct presidential elections and allowing the president to appoint a prime minister without parliamentary approval, a lot of the critics are saying that that would concentrate power in the hands of the executive. What do you say? How complicated is all this? We know politics in Somalia, of course, is very complex. How complicated is all this? How fraught with difficulty is it going forward?
Well, I think there's a deep history here that we also have to remember. You know, there's a strong aversion in Somalia to the concentration of power in the hands of one particular individual or the appearance thereof. And a lot of this is the hangover of the military dictatorship of Siad Barre in the 1970s and 1980s. And as fraught as Somali politics has been over the past, you know, two decades or so since the reconstitution of a central government, there's been two key principles, I think, that have kind of underlined governance. And, you know, one is a federal model and one is a parliamentary system. And so the problem with the constitutional changes, the way, you know, some of them are being basically construed right now, is it challenges some of those dynamics. And so, you know, the opposition feels that the government's basically designing the process, you know, to benefit them and overriding some of these principles. I think the issue is the level of inclusivity. You know, there's key constituents. You know, one particular member state in Puntland hasn't participated in these processes to date. And so, you know, to have a more viable document going forward and to avoid, you know, any risk of a backlash from that, I think there does need to be a bit more of an inconclusive process.
Afiari, what are some of the other obstacles at play here that have kept the country from coming together, that have kept everybody so divided across the political spectrum?
Well, I guess the source of the problem is that the current regime has embarked on, from the get-go, a winner-takes-all, where basically the group that somehow got the support of different groups came to power but eventually refused to share power. I think that's one of the big problems. The other maybe serious issue here is that the whole state-building project we're approaching it in a reverse way. Normally, you establish authority starting with the security institutions and taxation and policing and all of these things, and then after that, the rule of law institutions, and then we have democratic accountability institutions. So basically, what we have now is our political elite, deeply divided, deeply fragmented. As it is more or less interested in grabbing power and somehow arbitrarily using whatever they gain out of it. So basically, I would say, like, we have the priorities in reverse. And the second, we are also having some problems with this incomplete political settlement that somehow needs to be, expanded. Mm. By adding new forces, Somaliland and maybe Puntland and others. It seems that the way we're going now is excluding even some forces that have already been present.
Abdi Afiari there mentioned Puntland, and I wanted to ask you about that because the semi-autonomous state of Puntland, they say that they've withdrawn from the country's federal system and that Puntland will govern itself independently until constitutional amendments passed by the central government are approved in a forthcoming nationwide referendum. I'm curious to know a little bit more about this. Why exactly did they withdraw? What specifically did they object to? And how much does this development threaten unity?
I think there are two things to note here about Puntland. I think on one hand, the claim they made that they are withdrawing from the process, not from the country, but from the process, is legitimate because the president and his small group of parliamentarians, including the speaker, have hijacked that process. So that's the first thing. And if the president was to follow the procedure that has been laid for reforming the constitution, the folks in Puntland would have had no leg to stand on in terms of the claim that they are withdrawing. So the question is for Mogadishu rather than for Puntland. The claim also from Puntland suggests that if the process was, as has been agreed to before, when they were part of, then they will be partners in that project. So I think the Professor Afira is absolutely correct that the president is so sort of committed, blindly committed to grabbing as much power as he can, and that the few in the neighborhood, the regions around Mogadishu, basically have not much choice in that maneuver, that he thinks he can ride roughshod over everybody. And so there's a legitimacy on the part of Puntland to say, no, we have to stop this process, make it inclusive, and I would like to speak about inclusivity. But the president says, no, we're not going to do that. Mm. So that's the first thing. I want to address this question of inclusivity. There are two ways in which all Somalis can be included in this process. Mm. That's to say their concerns and their needs are addressed legitimately. That's one way to do it. That's what the democratic project is. Mm-hmm. The other way is the sort of farcical process that we have been engaged as a country, which says we are divided into particular groups. And so everybody in that group is supposed to have the same idea and the same interest, which is BS, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And then so addressing the common needs of ordinary people, education, security, health, employment, that will bring people together. So let me just give you an example. There was a process where the Senate in the House where I'm a member of was sort of going to hire few low-level staff members. Mm-hmm. And the process was so divisive and corrupt that they said, no, all Somali kids cannot compete for this. Mm. Every particular sort of a genealogical group have to select theirs. And so individual young Somalis who don't, quote-unquote, have friends in parliament have no chance in competing. That is as exclusive as apartheid. And so we have to get back to the idea of the fundamentals of democracy and accountability and give our people the hope and the desire they are so hungry for. Unless that's done, this process will ricochet again, and the country will go nowhere.
Omar, so if Puntland, which, as we mentioned, is semi-autonomous, if they would have to be a main player in efforts to restore stability going forward. Do they have to participate in this meeting that's coming up, the National Consultative Meeting? Because it's been reported that an invitation was sent to Puntland's leader, but it's unclear if he would participate. If he does not participate, and if there is already skepticism, as we've heard on this panel, about what that meeting can achieve, what does that mean?
Well, Puntland hasn't been participating in these meetings for over the past year. You know, it was January of last year where they kind of first basically said they were suspending their participation in the latest announcement that they made just after the constitutional review process for the first four chapters concluded was basically an extension of that and almost heightened the rhetoric about it, but followed on what they had already basically said. So no, I don't expect Puntland to be participating in these meetings. I mean, what that means going forward is, you know, I think Puntland's raised some of their concerns. These are fundamental concerns. These are recurrent concerns. It comes back to this tension about what exactly is the vision for federalism in Somalia going forward. You know, Puntland's always viewed itself as sort of almost the mother of federalism within Somalia and the protector of it. They've embedded clauses in their own constitution, basically, to that effect. And so I think, you know, them not participating in the process is a concern going forward. It means that there needs to be a dialogue between, you know, the Somali government and Puntland. You know, if Puntland's setting this out, you need to hear kind of what the reasons are. Both sides need to very clearly enunciate those and discuss going forward how you can overcome them. But the problem is that dialogue's not really happening right now. The problem is ties politically at a personal level have also gotten quite bad. And so the distance is very large.
Omar, let me also ask you about the fact that, you know, all of this is happening at a time when there's great tension between Somalia and Ethiopia. Ethiopia has been trying to strengthen relations with Somaliland and with Puntland. What's at the heart of these disputes?
Well, I mean, essentially, you know, Ethiopia upended politics in this part of the world with this whole memorandum of understanding they came to with Somaliland at the beginning of the year over sea access. And that was something Somalia reacted quite strongly to, given that, you know, they view it as an affront to their sovereignty. And so those tensions haven't fully subsided. You know, that memorandum, you know, I think it was a declaration of intent more than anything. We haven't seen a ton happen in terms of implementation side. And, you know, I think Ethiopia is almost playing a double game here, you know, trying to balance its desire for sea access, you know, through this agreement with kind of the consequences that might have for its relationship with Mogadishu. Now, this is intersecting with, I think, domestic Somali politics, because anytime you have such strong disputes within Somalia, you have constituencies starting to look abroad, you know, starting to look outside the country for support and whatnot. And so what we saw just recently was, you know, a reaction to this, where Puntland held a meeting with Ethiopian officials, and Somalia very quickly responded by, you know, expelling the Ethiopian ambassador and ordering the consulate in Puntland and Somaliland to close. So, you know, I think that's clearly, you know, a domestic angle to that, but it's intersecting with these regional politics that have been upended through the unresolved MOU.
Afiyari, I saw you reacting to some of what Omar was saying there, so I'll let you jump in. But I also want to ask you about, you know, from your perspective, what role can Somalia's neighbors play in achieving a more unified and a more peaceful future?
Let me first start with the case of Puntland, and I agree with Professor Samata. Puntland has had some legitimate grievances against the process, the current process of constitution making. But I guess what is questionable is action is that its leaders took afterwards. I think they could have expressed their discontent with Mogadishu in other ways. With respect to Omar's position, or I mean explanation, I agree with him. Ethiopia has been a spoiler in the Somali peacemaking for the past 20 plus years. It has been meddling, creating warlords, supporting with weapons here and there, and now its expansionist ambitions to grab Somali territories has been unhidden, actually, openly going and even in the past claiming the whole country, either Somaliland or the Benadir. So basically, Ethiopia has never been genuine or, I mean, interested in peace in Somalia. They wanted just weak and friendly and divided clan fiefdoms in the east, and that's what they have been working on. And this is not just this regime, even in the Baas regimes.
Abdi, I want to ask you about what Omar and I were talking about a moment ago, which is the tension between Ethiopia and Somalia, and specifically when it comes to what happened between Ethiopia and Somaliland. Essentially, Ethiopia wants to set up a naval base there. How much is that inflaming the current situation?
I think it's a factor in the current situation, constitutionally speaking, but relatively a minor one. I think the Ethiopian agenda, if I can give your audience an example, if Tehran, Iran, decides to say, we want to have a corridor to Mecca and then to Jeddah in Saudi Arabia, no sane sort of a Saudi leader or Saudi population will accept that. So the Ethiopian prime minister is pipe dreaming. If he's interested in having a commercial relationship with Somalia, then there are ways to do that. Uganda uses Mombasa of Kenya without claiming to put a naval base and grab 20, 30 kilometers of that territory of Kenya. So that's the first thing to note. If you came back to the constitutional process here, I think the Horn of Africa countries, sort of Kenya, Ethiopia and Djibouti are the immediate neighbors. I think the only country that has been genuine in helping Somalis put Humpty Dumpty together is Djibouti. And Djibouti is a small country with very little resources. So it just doesn't have the kind of a weight to make that goodwill materialize in the country. Kenya is interested. Kenya is claiming a part of Somali coastal territory as well in the sea that went ultimately to the international court. Which ruled for the Somali case primarily. And so there is no reason for the Ethiopian prime minister to make these sort of outlandish claims. Mm-hmm. But there are ways in cordial relationships between the two countries and the two peoples who are going to be together forever to find ways to work together without Somalia claiming Addis Ababa or Ethiopia claiming Berbera for that matter. So what it shows here is that there are enough trouble cooking inside Ethiopia against the prime minister that he wants to project the process overseas so that he can unify the Ethiopian population behind this. But, you know, there's all the kinds of evidence that's coming today is that diplomats are not able to travel outside Addis Ababa because of the chaos, the violence that's sort of engendered in that place. So I think Djibouti will be the only reasonable country in the region that's genuinely interested in Somalia coming back together as a unified sort of a country that's democratic in nature.
Omar, I want to ask you about a different aspect when it comes to this deal between Ethiopia and Somaliland. More specifically, does it have the potential to further destabilize the Horn of Africa? And when it comes to destabilizing factors, I want to ask you, how much has the power vacuum in Somalia given rise to armed groups like Al-Shabaab?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the key X factors here is the relationship between Ethiopia and Somalia when it comes to security, you know, whether that will continue. And, you know, just to remember, a year ago, we were talking about in this region of a frontline states initiative, where basically Ethiopia and Kenya, but particularly Ethiopia, was going to send tens of thousands of extra troops to fight Al-Shabaab in Somalia. And now a year later, you know, out on the heels of this MOU, we're talking about the complete opposite. You know, in Mogadishu, the fear is that Ethiopia is actually going to seize Somali land. And so I think that shows how quickly, how fluid the situation is and how quickly relations can turn. Now, the issue is, you know, Ethiopia is a security provider in Somalia as current. You know, it's both with the African Union peacekeeping mission, which is supposed to be drawing down troops through the end of this year, but a follow-on force, I would expect, is likely, but also on a bilateral level. And so if you had relations deteriorate to the point where there was a sudden withdrawal of those forces, you do have a vacuum. Now, can Somalia fill that vacuum with its own troops? Can it find other countries to fill the vacuum? What are the opportunity costs of that with regards to the offensive it's trying to maintain in central Somalia that it's been struggling with as well? But in any case, you would have a security vacuum, and I think that's where the concern is, that the relationship doesn't deteriorate to the point where the security cooperation is completely suddenly fractured.
Afiare, we don't have a whole lot of time left, but I want to turn our viewers' attention to another aspect of life and how difficult things are in Somalia, which is a humanitarian situation. Millions of people in Somalia struggle to get enough to eat. Widespread food shortages have followed a series of droughts. Millions are displaced. How dire currently is the humanitarian situation?
Well, that has been actually quite bad in the last 3 years, I would say. And basically, the sad thing is that at any given time from 2011 to now, the number of people who are food insecure have been increasing. It was 4 million, 5 million around 2011, and now it's close to 8.5 million. So basically, we see that this food insecurity and the situation that is linked to the environmental / climate change is really becoming a serious issue. By the way, the whole, I mean, lifestyle that is linked to the nomadic lifestyle or pastoral lifestyle is collapsing in front of our eyes, where we don't have any replacement or any governmental institutions that can guide our society out of these problems of between floods and droughts. So it's actually serious, and hopefully the international community will come to aid.
Abdi, we only have about 2 minutes left. I just want to ask, politics in Somalia are so fragmented. They have been for so long. Is national unity even achievable right now?
Two things I want to comment on. The first thing is that, unlike Omar, I don't believe Ethiopia is a security provider for Somalia. I think it actually what it does is feed insecurity, so the need for Ethiopian troops remains sore. So that's the first thing. But on this other matter of Somali unity, if you go across the country, as I have done, and you talk to ordinary people from all walks of life, school teachers, farmers, sort of merchants, and students, there is something that is singularly unique about this country. Mm-hmm. And that's the desire of ordinary people to get their country back. That's the language they use. They want to get their country back. Mm-hmm. And so if the leadership in Mogadishu, in the form of the president and the prime minister and the speaker of parliament and so on and so forth, are genuine about this, and they sort of articulate the ideas that sort of emanate from the local population, students, farmers, from Kismayo to Seila, from Puntland sort of to Jubaland, I think it will be a relatively easy process. Mm-hmm. But what's missing is the core political convictions in the central government that will guide that process and then mobilize the population, not only to come back together politically in a way that would be marvelous, but also to address the kind of concerns, ecological concerns. I'm a geographer by training. I can tell you that there is enough protein that can be produced in this country without single from outside, from fish to livestock to pulses and so on and so forth. This should be the focus of our government, rather than playing these sort of political games that are particularistic and egotistical in nature.
All right. Well, we have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Thanks so much to all of our guests, Abdi Ismail Samatar, Afyar Ilmi, and Omar Mahmoud. This episode was produced by Mohammed Al-Aishi, Fintan Monahan, Veronica Pedroza, and Jim Gilchrist. Studio sound was by Eli Elhani. The program was edited by Sarun Murali, Lynn Nguyen, and Joe DeFrias. Be sure to subscribe to the Inside Story podcast to catch every episode. Thank you for listening. Tune in on Friday for our next edition.
Coming up in The Take, how have some of the countries that border Israel responded to Iran's attack? That's The Take by Al Jazeera. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.